incredible synergy, as we will see. Very exciting synergy. All right. So it's good to be back for Chumashir. It's been a while. Haven't had Parsha in a while. So we now have the opportunity to look at a little bit of Chamishi of Parsha's Achronos. There's a lot to say about it. So we'll just try to highlight some of the key topics and say a few points and hopefully get something out of it. And what we'll find in Salia is a few points of pretty extreme synergy, perhaps, and in addition, a very, very important moment in Torah Mada history. So, let's take a look. So, first of all, the Aliyah starts off talking about the prohibition of Shchutei Chutz. We read here, Parak Zayin, Pasuk Ches, V'aleihem Toimar, Ish Ish Mibeis Yisrael, U'min Hager Asher Yavar B'Sechav, Asher Yale Ola Ozavach, V'al Pesach Ha'amoed Lo Yivienu La'asoso So Hashem V'nichro So Yishahu Me'amav. So there is a prohibition both of Shchita B'Chutz and also of Ha'ala B'Chutz. Ha'ala is Haftarah. All of this is punishable by Karis. So here, Rosh Hashanah Rafael Hirsch has a few comments where he notes that this is not the Avodah Zarah. Now we're on a different Madrega. That it's not that one is making offerings to other gods. In fact, that would be removed from this category. Here, we're talking about one who is making an offering to God, but is doing it outside of the context that we have identified as holy and sanctified. And therefore, says Rav Hirsch, the message is that one should not get the impression that he can turn to God and leave the Torah behind. Now, our religion is about the Torah being the path to God and recognizing that that has to be understood and appreciated. And if one thinks, okay, I can live without that and I can still be considered a religious person, I can still do my act of worship without worrying about it being in the context of the Torah and its sanctification, so that's a serious problem. And that's what the Torah is telling us is not an option here. Okay, so moving from there, so we find other concepts here. V'ish yish v'beis Yisrael, u'min hager, hagar b'seicham, asher yoichol kol dam, v'nasati fanai, v'nefesh ha'echelas es dam, v'yichrati osah mikarev amah. So one is also not allowed to eat from the dam, because, says the pasuk, ki nefesh ha'basar badam hi, v'anini sativ lachem l'mizbeach, l'chaper al nafshoseichem, ki hadam hu b'nefesh yichaper. So we have a prohibition of eating dam, of eating blood, and the Torah seems to tell us specifics about why this is, because the nefesh or the basar is in the dam, the life is in the blood, and I have given you this for the mizbeach to be mechaper on your nefashos. So we'll come back to that point, but let's read more about this. Alkein amarti l'bnei Yisrael, so therefore I have said, no one should eat blood. Now of course eating blood just seems like a mitzias challenge. How exactly do you eat the liquid of blood? So the Yerushalmi in Yuma has a comment here that you see that halachically drinking is also eating. So we can call drinking with the language of eating because it has the same impact. That's also considered to be a violation of any type of Isra Achila. And that's important as a practical point. But Targum Tamima notes that there's a limit to how much it's the same. Because yes, it's true that one is still in violation if one is drinking something prohibited just as much as if he's eating something prohibited. But eating and drinking are not exactly the same because it has an afkamina for, there's some synergy points, Chatzi Shir. Now, if you want to combine eating and drinking to make one shir, it doesn't work. They're on two different tracks. We use different terminology for the shir. And therefore, however much you eat and however much you drink, they don't combine together to make one full unit. So this is something that impacts the laws of Yom Kippur. When we mentioned that in Yom Kippur, the practice is each one needs to eat. So So if one is told they have to eat a full amount or else they're not going to protect their health, so then they eat a full amount. But what if it's possible to eat less? So then we normally advise them to eat less than a shear. So it's important to know, practically speaking, that they can be eating and drinking, and it's two different things. Those are not going to combine. So they'll eat less than a shear, and they'll drink less than a shear, and that could happen at the same time. That's not going to combine into one thing. So there's a little bit of synergy here in terms of this reference to chatzi shear. But there's more to it. So let's see why we get into even more synergy in a moment. It says the next pasuk, v'ish ish v'mei Yisrael, v'mnager hagar v'seicham asher yotzud, seid chaya o'of asher ye'ochel, v'shofach es damo v'chiso be'ofar. So somebody is going to hunt some kind of an animal and shecht it, so then the blood should be poured out and it should be covered. Here you have the mitzvah of Kisui Hadam. It's interesting that it's taught in the reference of the connection of hunting. Chazal have some comments about what that's supposed to represent, because certainly that's not the only context in which this comes up. Apparently it's supposed to suggest a certain level of preparation, Chazal understood. But it's also important to note that hunting is a tricky thing, because hunting would only be permitted in the context of food or other practical needs. Hunting for sport was the topic of a famous tshuva in Nodav Yehuda. Nodav Yehuda in his tshuvas in Yer Day and Siman Yud has an important, well-known tshuva where he says that hunting is not an activity for a nice Jewish boy. That hunting for sport, where it's not connected to food and it's not connected to clothing or the like, so then that has many issues. It's an issue of Baal Tashlis. It's an issue of satana, a person's hanging around in the jungle, in the forest, for nothing. So it has many issues there. And overall, he says this is not something that the Kedosh Yisrael has decided is proper behavior, that this is something that we don't do for fun, we do it for necessity, but it's not considered to be a sport. So it shouldn't be considered to be a sport. But in any event, so when you have shechted an animal, however you obtain it, practically speaking, so then there's an obligation of kisa hadam, of covering the blood. So, question is, why do you have such a mitzvah? Why is there such an idea? So one could say that this is an act of respect. As we see, the Torah here is emphasizing, and we'll come back to this point in a moment, that blood is the nefesh, blood represents the essence. So the truth is, it would seem pretty understandable if we'd say that's what it's about. The same way, if somebody dies, they get buried as an act of respect, and we know the Torah tells us that specifically in the context even of somebody who's killed by Beis Din, how we get Beis Din, have the mitzvah of kvura as a respect. So one would think that if blood is identified as a nefesh, so this is in essence kind of like kvura for the blood, that the blood should also be treated with respect. But there is a statement to the Rashbam that leads us into some super synergy, and I want to thank Jed, who's not here today, it's a family issue, but Jed called my attention to this point, that there's some major synergy here, that the Rashbam writes that the reason we cover the blood is so that it will not be roi l'achila. We don't want to come to eat the blood, apparently, so therefore, since it's usher to eat the blood, so we cover it up. So what does this sound like?
Okay.
Oh, it sounds like a siag d'oraisa. So our friend Rabbi Simon Shlita, this is what Jed called attention to, points this out in his sefer, Rabbi Baruch, that he has a whole essay about this, that, as you know, Rabbi Yosef Engel, as he discusses, has an essay about the concept of a siag d'oraisa, and this is an example, that we cover up the blood so that we shouldn't come to eat it. Now, it's also interesting that take this opportunity, so here's again super synergy, because we've been talking about this topic all week, and now here it is showing up in our Aliyah. But it's also interesting, this is could be said about other things, including the topic that we spoke about yesterday, that a siag normally would mean that we're afraid that you'll violate Avera A, so therefore don't do action B. But the idea that you take positive steps in order to avoid an Avera, That's different than a siyag. So it's interesting that we have, among Rabbi Yosef Engel's list, we have things which seem to fall into that category. And we spoke yesterday a little bit about the unusual gezeira of cooking on Yom Tov for Shabbos, how that might be a different type of gezeira. So here on a level of Torah, the things that we're counting as a siyag include apparently not only prohibitions, but active things that we do in order to prevent that. So this being on the list, if you consider this a siyag, so that would seem to be in that category. And this would also be relevant to what we spoke about yesterday. If you recall, we talked about Tosefta Shabbos and Yantif as a siyag. So it seems like there also we're saying to do something, do a positive mitzvah as a safeguard. Although there you could argue that maybe there's no mitzvah in a positive sense of Tosefta Shabbos. What it really means is it's an extension of the Isser Malacha. Don't do Malacha on Shabbos, and don't do Malacha in the time before Shabbos either. But it seems on the surface like that would be considered a positive mitzvah. So here, together with Kisei Dam, we see some examples of positive mitzvah, which is there to prevent another Aveira from taking place. And that's interesting. I thought maybe another possible example, this is also would be stretching the boundaries a little bit, but we have a mitzvah in the Torah, because I don't understand the Darshan from Pasuk. We have a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. Another harsher topic. So the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur, some of the Rishonim understand that it's there to make the fast easier, that we shouldn't go in starving to Yom Kippur. And some of the Rishonim have the language, Shlo Yavo Lidei Bittul Inui, that you shouldn't come to having to break your fast in the kippur because you're so starving, you haven't eaten the day before, so therefore you should eat for that purpose. So that might also be an example of a mitzvah saseh. There, it's hard to frame that as a mitzvah lo saseh. Something that we're told to do in order to avoid having to break a isser. Although there, one could argue it's also different because if one really was collapsing, so then they'd be mechuyev to eat. So it's not that they'd be doing an aveira, it's that they wouldn't be able to fulfill the ideal of fasting because of their compromised position. So again, these are all different models that kind of test the boundaries of what we call a siyag and what we would call a safeguard. So this is interesting. But in any event, Rabbi Simon has in a sefer a whole topic about the siyag and Torah in this week's parsha because of this concept of a Yisur Hadam. So while he's talking about this, he notes also that some explain that therefore the reason we don't need Yisur Hadam for Mekdashim, for Hektish, is because people are already kept away from Hektish, so we don't have to worry, we'll come to eat the blood, similarly to what we find in Chametz sometimes also, that you find such a concept that you don't have to have by Yerah, by Yimotze, by Chametz Shal Hektish, because people are already distanced from that, so too apparently we shouldn't need Kisei Dam by Hektish. The Torah Tamima has a similar approach over here, talking about why we don't apply it to a Behema. You think that a Behema should have Kisei Hadam. So he extends this idea that since the Behema is part of what is sacrificed on the Mizbeach, that's also in this category. So it's a little bit of a stretch. I saw that my grandfather in his commentary on Torah Tamima and the Meshivas Nefesh, so he finds that to be difficult because, first of all, blood is by itself also. So why don't we say that people are already bedilei from the blood? It's an independent issur that you need the hektish to create already a different reason for you to be separated from it. So he argues on this whole idea. He says it's exer sakasa, it doesn't really fit well with the suggested reason.
Why?
But
why?
It's because the idea that blood itself is already usur. So we're saying that oh, hektish people are afraid of, they'll stay away from. But why don't we say that the Yisur Dam also has that type of pacha to it? And other details that don't fit so well, so he ultimately concludes, since the Gzeres HaKosav doesn't really fit this reason. But while we spent all this time talking about Siyag D'Oraisa, so Rabbi Simon comments further, he quotes from a Divrei Yoel from the Sa'ar Merav, that the concept of a Siyag, in the Seil Tisharim that we've mentioned, that there's an idea not just on a communal level, but the individuals make safeguards also. So when one makes a siyag, it's a recognition of one's limitations. It's an act of modesty, it's an act of anivus, it's an awareness that you're not perfect and that you can't be expected to handle every type of challenge. I was actually just reading this in a book the other day, somebody who gives advice to a lot of corporate executives. He says that he found a mentality that, specifically in that profession, that people seem to feel like they have to live their whole life like it's a dramatic narrative, that they have to engage in every challenge and beat the challenge. And they would be better off realizing that a lot of life would be much smoother if you didn't engage the challenge in the first place, that if you can avoid some challenges, you're better off. So too, here's what the Divriola is saying, is that we shouldn't have the sense that we can take on everything and then throw it at me and I can handle it, but we should recognize that we have human weaknesses, and therefore to create the distance is advisable, and therefore the Torah itself sets the path by doing some of those itself, as we've been talking about this week. Hi.
Would you say that for a behemoth, like, they're usually domesticated animals? So, like, you need, actually, that would be why it should have kisei adam. Okay, never mind.
Okay, so we can think about that a little more. But it's also interesting that from this pasuk, the pasuk says, "V'shafach esdamo l'chiseihu." So you pour out the blood and you cover it up. So the Gemara Maseches Chulin and Daf Pei Zayin has at least two drushes from this pasuk, which are relevant not just here but to other areas of the Torah as well. Now, one is that so we see this connection apparently between the shficha and the kisui, between the pouring out of the blood and the covering it up. So one drasha the Gemara has is the way that you poured it up, that's how you should, where you poured it out, that's how you should cover it up. What does that mean? It means you pour it with your hand, so you should cover it with your hand. You shouldn't pour it on the ground, then we'll use your foot to kick some dirt on top of it and say that's how you'll do this kisui, because that is apparently a lizui mitzvah, that is a disrespect to the mitzvah. And this is a concept that comes up in other places in Shas. So for example, in the Sugyas of Chanukah, the second paragraph of Shabbos, the Gemara talks about Bizui Mitzvah. I don't know if any of our veterans graduating today were in this year when we went to the Sugyas of Chanukah a few years ago. So there the Gemara talks about Bizui Mitzvah, about in the context of using Neres Chanukah for other things. And the Gemara there says, Avuon dekulo dam, that the source of this whole concept of Bizui Mitzvah is from dam. Because the Gemara has this drasha on this pasuk, that Ted teaches us on a level of Min HaTorah that one shouldn't act in a disrespectful way towards mitzvos, so therefore to use your foot to cover up the blood would apparently be a disrespectful way to do it. And then the Gemara has another drasha from this pasuk that when it comes to the relationship between the pouring and the covering, that not just the body part that does the acts, but also the one who does the pouring should do the covering. So what's the point there? That even though the pasuk will go on to say that anyone else could also do kisui adam, let's say if somebody shechts an animal and then leaves the blood lying around, doesn't do anything about it, so somebody else is going to come and find this, he has the responsibility to cover up the blood, and that's what emerges from the pasuk here also, ki nefesh kol basar damo b'nafshohu, v'omer l'vnei Yisrael, dam kol basar lo sechelu, ki nefesh kol basar damo hu, v'chol ochla v'kareis. So whoever comes and finds this has an obligation. So there, here again, is a machlokas from the Torah to me and my grandfather in terms of the nature of that drasha the Gemara has, that other people have to do it also, but it's apparently reflecting a tension here, that on the one hand, anyone else could do it. So if somebody leaves this left over, so anyone else could come and has an obligation to come and take care of it. But assuming the person does want to do it himself, so then it's his chus. So that's what the Gemara is saying in the Pulin, that whoever does the shrita, also he should be the one to do the kisei hadam. So here the Gemara teaches his din, that if you were going to shecht an animal, and the blood's there on the floor, and you're about to cover it up, and then just then somebody runs over and says, oh look, blood of a shechted animal, I want to cover it up, and they throw the dirt onto the blood instead of you, so they owe you money, they owe you asar zebuvin, they owe you 10 gold coins. And this is a concept you find elsewhere in Halacha. If you want to do a little bit of keep the Pesach connections going, the Michas Chinuch has a discussion about whether destroying chametz, is that something that we do just because we want to make sure we won't violate eating chametz? Or because that Bali Rav Bali Matzeh is a passive idea of simply not having chametz in the house, or does Tashbih Sumin, there's an actual kiyum mitzvah in destroying the chametz. And one of the nafkaminas he writes is if you're about to destroy your chametz and somebody runs over with a blowtorch and decides to a flamethrower and decides to destroy it for you, that he should have to pay you masar zehuvim, the same thing that we learn here, they stole your mitzvah, he should have to pay you 10 gold coins. So the truth is, everything we said in the past few minutes sounds like a few disassociated dinim that are all derived from this pasuk, but we could say there is a connection here, that all these three dinim, we just talked about this whole mitzvah being a siag, and the idea that the mitzvah itself is the source for bizui mitzvah and paying for a quote-unquote stolen mitzvah. So all of these are all revolving around the same concept, which is a love and appreciation for mitzvah. So recognition that we don't take the mitzvah opportunity casually, and we make sure to protect the circumstances, and therefore also we don't act disrespectfully within this mitzvah, even in the mitzvah itself, which is a protection. We don't do it in a disrespectful fashion, and we cherish it so much that if somebody were to take somebody else's opportunity, they'd have to pay them. So it's really a common theme here that all of this is about instilling within us an appreciation and a recognition for our spiritual opportunities. It's also interesting that Shechem Sofer has a tshuva, which I always wondered about, where he talks about somebody who played a practical joke on somebody else. It's a little bit of synergy if we're talking about stealing is a practical joke. So stealing is a practical joke is a problem because Lo Signo Benas Amekai, we were talking about the other day. But it's also a separate problem. Any mean practical joke is a problem because it's a violation of the Yisro of Anas Devarim. You're not allowed to cause people emotional anguish. So the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva about what punishments should be given to somebody who violated Anas Devarim, somebody who played a mean joke on somebody else. What punishment should be given? So the case was described there that there was a person in the community who very much appreciated the mitzvah of Mila. He always looked for an opportunity to perform a bris Mila. So there was a man who said to him, hey, guess what? I just had a baby boy, and I want you to come to the bris on Wednesday and be the mole. So the guy travels however many hours to come to his farm somewhere, and it turns out, guess what? It's really a baby girl. Haha. So it was a joke that he played on this guy, just again, shoved out there for nothing. And the Chassam Sofer was asked, what kind of punishment should be put on this person? I think the person was either the shofet or the chazan, somebody of some stature in the community. The question of whether he should be fired. So the Chassam Sofer concludes he shouldn't be fired, but there's certain punishments we should put on him. And one of them is he has to pay 10 zehuvim. So this idea of 10 zehuvim, 10 gold coins, is the value for a mitzvah. It's interesting, that comes from here. That comes from this idea that you pay that for a stolen mitzvah. But here, it's an interesting application because there is no mitzvah. The mitzvah was no bris, so there was nothing that was stolen, and no one took away his bris opportunity. It wasn't there in the first place. So apparently what the Chassam Sofer was thinking is that this Gemara shows us that we value a mitzvah. A mitzvah is clearly infinite, but we put a price on it. We put a price of 10 zehuvim. So here, this guy schlepped up for nothing. So why did he schlep? He schlep because he thought he was going to get a mitzvah. So if he thought he was going to get a mitzvah, so we pay him, so to speak, the value of the mitzvah to compensate him for his time. So what is that? That's 10 gold coins. But again, all of this is derived from this context, presumably because there's a common theme here, that all of this is about showing respect for mitzvot and making sure that our opportunities are protected and are treated properly. So here, this is all in the context of the Isra Dam, which clearly seems to be related to one way or another. So the pasuk keeps emphasizing ki nefesh kol basar dam benafshahu, etc., etc. So it's interesting that the Torah is giving so much space to that. So the Moshe Feinstein, his Darish Moshe, so he talks about this, and he thinks the reason that the Torah is emphasizing this is because the truth is the whole concept is a little bit difficult because normally we have a rule that you can't bring non-kosher food for korbanos. You can't be makir of a non-kosher animal as a korban. We have a din of mimashki Yisrael, that whatever is kosher to be consumed by a Jew is the standard for what is brought in the mizbeach. So we have a problem with dam, that here dam is the main thing that's brought in the mizbeach, and it's completely usur for a Jew to eat. So how do we deal with mimashki Yisrael? So the Torah is basically explaining that this is its own concept, that here blood, it's not that it's bad for you, it's not a behemoth tmeya, it's that the opposite, it's a milo, that this is the source of the nefesh, this is what represents life, so therefore that's why it's brought on the mizbeach, because it's a kapara for the nefesh, it's a stand-in for the nefesh, But that's also why you shouldn't eat it, because it's reserved for that function. So even once we assume that it's mutter to eat meat, we still have to specify that, yes, the meat itself is mutter, but the blood is in a different category, and therefore the Torah has to explain that. And it's interesting, it's kind of, we know, we've mentioned in the past, that Reb Moshe Feinstein and Rebecca Kamenetsky were close associates who passed away in a close period of time to each other, 30 years ago. So kind of a tag team point. So in the next pasuk, Yaakov Kamenetsky and his sefer picks up this issue, and it talks about the pasuk which says, "V'chol nefesh asher tochal nevelu u'treifa v'ezrach u'bager v'chibes v'gadol v'rachetz v'mayim v'tamei ad ha'erev v'toher." So we have a tumah that comes from nevelu. So what does that guy do with anything all of a sudden? What's that doing here? So the Amos Liakov, Yaakov Kamenetsky writes, based on the Ramban, in the beginning of Chumash, in the beginning of Bereishis, that the Ramban says that Shchita is the way that Jews are allowed to eat something, because that takes out all the blood. That's what Shchita accomplishes, and that's the nature of this particular method of killing the animal. So in general, we don't want to eat life, so there's different levels. So for Bnei Noach, there's an answer of Eivir Menachai, they can't eat an animal that's actually alive. And for Jews, we go further, that the simen of life, of this blood, which is Tuah Nefesh, so that we can't eat either. So therefore, we only eat meat that has been shechted, because shechita is the type of killing of the animal that releases all of the blood, that takes it all out. Then obviously, we have the obligation to go further and make sure that it's all out. So therefore, that idea is a part and parcel of what we're reading here. So that's why this concept of Tumas Nevela is mentioned in this context. Okay, so in the interest of time, we'll skip towards the end of the Aliyah here. So let's go to the part of Parak Yud Ches. That the whole idea is we're trying not to eat blood. Blood is the source of life, and we respect that, so we offer that on the Mizbeach as a replacement for our own lives, and we don't eat it, because that's how we show our respect for that. So blood itself we don't eat, but also we only eat animals that have been shechted, because shechita separates all the blood from the animal. So the Yisr of a Nevela, which is an animal that dies without shechita, is something that we don't eat, and the Tumah here is mentioned in that context. Okay, so let's just skip along here. B'chol nefesh ha'techol nevei l'treif, that's what we're here to look at, fine. V'yim lo yichabes, v'basaro lo yirchatz, v'nasa avonu. V'yidabar Hashem l'shalemur, d'abar v'nei Yisrael, v'amart aleihem, ani Hashem l'okeichem, k'masei eretz Mitzrayim, asher yishavtem ba, lo sasu, v'k'masei eretz Kinan, asher ani mevi, eschem shama, lo yisasu, v'chukaseyim lo yisveleichem. So here we have an issur of following in the path of the Umas Ha'olam. But specifically, it's understood that this is a reference to general immorality, sexual immorality, and all kinds of activities in that category. And that the reference to Eretz Mitzrayim and Eretz Canaan, that these are the places which were the most immoral, and therefore this is held up as what we should not be, what we should not do. The Rashi of Rabbi Avner Goldberg has a whole essay here, where he notes that we have to figure out exactly what it is that's being conveyed here, because this can't just be a reference to arayos, because later on in our parsha, the Torah is going to list the specific arayos. So what do we need this pasuk for if it's telling us to stay away from arayos? And also, what is the kid here for? Kimasei Eretz Mitzrayim. So he has a whole essay where he notes the idea that you find elsewhere, that we know that arayos is a avera, but it represents a certain energy which the Torah and Chazal connect to chesed. It's an energy that could be used for chesed, but it can be taken in the wrong direction as well. And part of the whole philosophical idea of the Jews being sent into Mitzrayim is that they need to take all of those kofos and convert them for positive ends. So the Torah is warning here that yes, there's a tremendous energy in Mitzrayim, but that energy needs to be taken and diverted, needs to be taken and used towards positive ends, and therefore we're told, yes, your experience in Mitzrayim is meant to allow you to uplift that energy, but you don't do what they do with it. You don't do Kimasei Eretz Mitzrayim, you instead use it towards matters of Kedusha. and that this is an extension of the whole theme that you find in the Rambam and Hilchos Deis in a few places, that a tzaddik is identified not only because he's doing mitzvos, not only because he's doing obviously religious things, but even the more mundane things that he does that are not religious in nature, or don't seem to be, are also part of the whole orientation towards Avodas Hashem, towards meaningful existence, and have been uplifted and sanctified. And that's also what the Pasuk is conveying a little bit, that even in these other areas of life, we don't act like the mice of Mitzrayim, but we're taking these forces and converting them for something positive. Okay, so in this next Pasuk, there's something fascinating. You ready for a major moment in Torah Ramadan history? Alright, so especially those of you who are graduating this week, you shouldn't leave here before a major exposure to some Torah Ramadan history. So first, a little background. This is really a fascinating thing. So, if you're familiar with the Torah Ramadan literature, back in my day, there used to be more attention paid to the whole concept of Torah Ramadan and NYU. There was a Torah Ramadan reader. Has anyone seen that? So there's a lot of literature about the whole nature of involvement in secular studies and to what degree and the like. So among the sources which one would come across if one would pursue this issue, to what extent should you be involved in university and secular studies, what's the obligation of Talmud Torah, is it all-consuming, etc., etc. So two major places in the Achronim of the last century. One is, there's an essay in the Sefer Birka Shmuel. The Birka Shmuel in Masechet Kedushin, which Yeshiva is learning next year. So in the end of a Sefer in Kedushin, which you know, is all about Lumdus and Kedushin, but the last essay, he talks about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. What exactly is the nature of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? Is it all day and all night? Is it something you can accomplish part of the day and go on to do other things? How does it impact on one's desire to be involved in other studies or other pursuits? So there's an essay about this in the Sefer Birka Shmuel. That's Exhibit A. Exhibit B, in the Sefer Kovet Shiurim, Rabbi Chana Wasserman. So there he has mostly, again, Lumdish pieces and the Gemara, but he has a few letters, and there he has a letter where he, Lashitaso, comes out very strongly against going to university. This is perspective. So what may not be obvious, but was well known, is that these two shtiklach, the Tshuva of Rabbi Chanan in the Kovet Shiurim, and the piece of Rabbi Baruch Ber in the Birka Shmuel and Kedushin, were both responses. They were both letters that were written because they themselves were asked the question. That somebody wrote to them saying, tell me, what should I do? Should I go to university? Should I not go to university? What's the nature of the obligation of Talmud Torah? Is it all-consuming? How should I address this issue? So they responded, and that became a part of the canon, that became major essays within the Sifrei Achronim, the Birka Shmuel and Kedushin, and the essay in the Kovet Shiurim. So what's well known is that, even though I don't think it's identified in either place, is that the one who asked the question, the one who wrote letters to these two Gedolim and to two other Gedolim, which are not as easily found, was Rav Shimon Schwab. Shimon Schwab, here from the neighborhood, from Washington Heights, who was for many years the Rav of the Warriors community here in Washington Heights. So when he was a young man, so he was considering this issue, and he sent letters to the Gedolim of his time, including Rav Baruch Ber and Rav Chanan Wasserman, and he asked this question, and these are among the answers that he got. So that part is relatively well known. What I did not realize until this week is, you find something fascinating if you look at this next pasuk here. So pasuk Dalet says, "This mishpatay tasu v'yesku kosai tishmoru l'lechet kohen ani Hashem Elokeichem. You shall do my mishpatim, you shall do my chukim l'lechet kohen." So what does that mean, l'lechet kohen? So this is like the word halacha, right? That we call our whole system of law halicha. We walk with the Torah. So there's a medrash that has a reading here on l'lechet kohen, which on the surface, the Medrash seems pretty anti-Torah Ramadan, one might think. That the Medrash says, or it's a little bit of a question how to read this, we'll see in a second, but the Medrash says, l'leches b'hem, that they should be ikker and not tofel, that you shouldn't do anything else with them, that you shouldn't say, okay, I'm finished, now I can move on to other things. All of that is denied by this pasuk alachas b'hem. This is telling you that it should be, basically, it sounds like the only thing that you do. So on the surface, that doesn't seem to be such a good fit for a Torah Mada perspective. However, if you look in the Sefer of the Rosh Hashanah of Fall Hirsch, if you look at his commentary on the Torah, so you know he was a proponent of Torah and Derech Eretz, so he understands the Medrash differently. He says that the Medrash, first off, the first line says that it should be Iker and not Tafel, it should be the main thing and not secondary. So therefore, it implies that something else could be secondary. So if one takes the attitude that the Torah is the Iker, and all the other disciplines are there as a secondary concept but that help us understand it, so then that does become appropriate. And then he goes on to say the rest of the phrases also, when it says that you shouldn't bring anything else with it, it means to equate it to Torah, but it doesn't mean that you shouldn't study at all. And when it says that you shouldn't leave the Torah and now go on to other things, it means that you shouldn't leave the values of the Torah behind. You should take the Torah's values with as you consider these other things, like we said to our graduating seniors before. And that's what the Medrash is saying, essentially one that's much more compatible with a Torah, modern Torah, and Derech Eretz philosophy, that's essentially the message of the Medrash. Okay, so that's already interesting. Now it gets more interesting if you look in the Sefer of Rosh Shimon Schwab on this pasuk. So on this pasuk, he quotes the Persh's interpretation. And then he goes on to say, I wasn't aware that he had discussed this in public, he said, when I was a young man, so I wrote several letters asking people about the question of the involvement in other pursuits and Torah study and the like, and I got some responses. But then he quotes there that he was given advice by two gedolim to drop the issue. One was the Blaze Yudel Finkel, who was Rashi Zuzmir, who said to him that the position of the Machmirim on this issue, so it would be a gzera, synergy, a gzera sheinat tzibur yochel amud ba, people won't be able to handle that, so you might as well drop the whole thing. And he said to Imre Emes, the Ger Rebbe said to him that, apparently assuming that some of these positions would be in opposition or at variance with the views of Rosh Hashanah Fall Hirsch, who he would later come to succeed, So what he said to him, you have to be very, very careful about the covet of Rav Hirsch, because he wrote, Rav Hirsch is a walking Sefer Musa. So you should be very careful of the covet of Rosh Hashanah Fall Hirsch, and therefore he also encouraged him to set aside this project. So Rav Schwab writes there, fascinating, he says that I took this advice and I never published it. Others have published it, but he says, it's nafshi yitzalti, me, I stayed in my own neshama, I didn't get involved in pushing this topic further, but others published it. So, as you mentioned, a number of the responses that he got did become not only public, but became really a part of a very prominent svarim, which are major pillars of the Beis Medrash, the Bikur Shmuel, the Chovos Shiur. But this was the history, and so this is a little insight into it, and in looking at Schwab's comment on this passage.
What was the problem with the cover for Rav Hirsch?
I assume what he means is that Rav Hirsch was a proponent of Torah and Derech Eretz, and is expressed in this pasuk. And again, this you could just read in the commentary of Hirsch, what he says on this pasuk. He says this whole idea. So if one were to take a very Torah-only perspective, so it would seem to be at variance with Rav Hirsch's position. So considering that that might be what some of the responses he was getting would say, so the Ger Rebbe was saying, be very careful in terms of how you address the topic. You don't want to be pagaying the covet or the perversion. Very interesting idea. Okay, so there's a lot more to say. We'll just make quick notes of the last pasuk, which one could talk about for many hours. We won't do that, but we'll just take note of it because it's a very well-known concept. That the pasuk ends, "Ushmartem eschukosai b'esmishpatai asher yase osam hadam v'chai bohem ani Hashem." So you shall follow my chukim and mishpatim, which people shall do, and you shall live with them, ani Hashem. So Rashi and Uncle say the idea of a chai bohem, that doesn't mean ba'olam hazeh. That it means ba'olam haba. That this is how you get chai olam in the world to come, by following the mitzvahs, because in this world people eventually die, so it can't mean that following this will make you live in this world, but rather it means that this is where you get olam haba from. And Rav Hirsch here, living since Musa, and the others note, if few other places also noticed that this also was a remez to the idea, which is a Sanhedrin topic, that Olam Haba is not only for Jews. We know that you should earn eternal reward as a non-Jew also by keeping the Shabbat mitzvahs b'nei Noach. So some suggest that that's merubas here, because Tosfos in a few places writes that when the Torah uses the word ha'adam as opposed to adam, it's a way to indicate that this includes non-Jews also. So here in this pasuk, ha'adam, this is what ha'adam should do and get eternal life. So this is an indication that this is something that's possible for the Umos Olam as well. But in any event, we find other interpretations that don't focus on Olam Haba. Most well known is the idea of a pikuach nefesh dolfe sakol, and that by most mitzvahs we say avor v'al yehareg. Again, a gemara in Sanhedrin and in Yuma, that the Torah says that the mitzvahs are for us to live with and not to die with, and therefore apparently it's a reference to not just Olam Haba but Olam Hazeh as well, and presumably the two link to each other. We'll just close off by noting that the Chafetz Chaim, in his introduction to a few places, quotes this pasuk. You can see where it's a kind of a general pasuk that one might make reference to, but he makes reference to it in different contexts. One is in the introduction to Mishnah Berurah. So in the introduction to Mishnah Berurah, he says that even though you get Talmud Torah schar for learning all kinds of things, but to learn halacha maisa is very important, and specifically halacha maisa that comes up all the time. So he writes this in his introduction to his commentary on Aruch Chaim, Mishnah Berurah. He says to learn Aruch Chaim, to learn the stuff that comes up daily, that's very crucial, and he says that that's merubas in this pasuk, u'shmartem eschukosai, which he understands as Talmud Torah, u'shmartem eschukosai, asher yaso osam ha'adam, that which you do every day, that should be what you are learning and what you're holding on to, and that's an idea that he quotes over there. And in the introduction to Shemir Salashin, he also quotes this pasuk, and he says the mitzvahs all represent various parts of the body, and if one is not careful in a mitzvah, he's going to end up missing out something in that part of the body. And therefore, he says Lashon Hara is pretty important, because if you're not careful with the aveira of the Lashon, you'll end up without a mouth, without a tongue, and that's going to be pretty bad, because as we know, speech is one of the defining elements of humanity, so you don't want to be missing that. And therefore, he says from this pasuk that the mitzvos, it's not that you live for them, but you live through them, b'chai bohem, that because you are careful of these mitzvos, you will also then have the full physical expression, and that's another reason to avoid Lashon Hara. Okay, so we'll stop here. Again, a lot more to say about this aliyah, and thanks to our schedule, we'll have an opportunity to talk about Parashat Kedoshim next week also, but stay tuned for all of our various schedule